Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to look at eating dark chocolate to beat the midday slump, Northern Arizona University. How the Mediterranean diet plus olive oil and nuts will improve cognitive function from the Institute of Biomedical Investigations in Spain. How this extract reduces high blood pressure and cholesterol. Easy to get, inexpensive, and it's better than the leading drug for lowering the blood pressure and blood sugar as well. Also, natural remedies for acne. I'll give you those. And a lot more on health and healing. We're also going to take a look at other issues. For example, when a black swan flies over Wall Street's House of Cards, Jerry Croth from Counterpunch, do you know what derivatives are? Do you know how much is out there? Do you know why you should be very concerned? Do you want to know that not a single presidential candidate understands them, let alone can describe what they could do to crash the entire world economy? We'll talk about it. Also, Libya chaos. The results of Western intervention and intrusion by Timothy Bancroft Henshey, and we're going to look at that as well. You see, we're good at making messes. In fact, all we do is make a mess. Everywhere we go, we make a mess because we have a wrong mindset. It's not that our intention by many people who support our efforts are not noble. It's that no one ever stops and says, what are the results? How'd that work out for everyone over in Libya and Iraq and Afghanistan? And how'd our war on crime and our war on drugs and war on poverty and war on AIDS and war on cancer? How'd all those wars work out? No one ever asks. Because if we ever ask for the truth about anything, we would find we are living in a pure, dystopian, illusionary world. I'll tell you how bad it is. Carl Grossman counterpunched the mad science of nuclear airplanes. Let me give you an idea of this. Consider getting on an airplane with nuclear-powered engines. Now, consider the consequences if an atomic airplane crashes. Something for the future? No. Boeing Company last week received approval from the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office for an airplane engine that combines the use of lasers and nuclear power. That's right. Quote, Boeing's new patented engine provides thrust to a very different and rather novel manner. You think? Is it mad science? No, it's not mad science. It's very profitable science. After all, we the people are paying for it. My guest in the second part of our program today is Caroline Fredrickson. You may not have heard from her or about her, but she's the president of the American Constitution Society and a leader in the progressive movement dealing with civil and voting rights and labor law, marriage equality, women's issues, and anti-discrimination. She's also a senior fellow at Demos, and earlier was the director of the ACLU's Washington Legislative Office and general counsel and legal advisor to the NARAL Pro-Choice America. She's a graduate of Yale and Columbia. We're going to talk about the power and control of secretive, autonomous, and unaccountable national security elites over the nation's decision-making regarding war and peace. And we have a lot of other little snippets we're going to share with you about the real causes of addiction, addictive behavior. I think you'll like to know that. And for those who asked questions yesterday after my show where I said, you've been sold out. You're going to have it worse than ever before in your history. And why? Well, today I'm going to play a segment that shows you who's behind it all. What's their motive? They've been playing this game long enough. It's time they were outed, and we will today. Let's begin. There's all kinds of chocolate, but if you want a really good, healthy chocolate, get the very dark chocolate. The best of the best, the absolute pinnacle would be 85%. But if you got 70%, that would still be good. According to Northern Arizona University, if you eat a high cacao, that's chocolate, every afternoon, then this unsweetened dark chocolate, research shows, will lower your blood sugar, lower your blood pressure, and improve attention, and especially important when it comes to that mid-afternoon slump. Quote, chocolate indeed is a stimulant and it activates the brain in a really special way. It can increase brain characteristics of attention, and it'll also significantly affect blood pressure levels. The study was published in the peer-reviewed journal Neuroregulation, and that's important. So good, healthy chocolate. And by the way, chocolate's also a vasodilator, meaning that it widens blood vessels and lowers blood pressure, and it also contains some very powerful stimulants. Now, you'll get a little bit of caffeine, but it's a very little bit. And if you're taking theanine, that won't matter at all. But if you're getting, let's say, minimum 60% cacao chocolate, was still able to show the brain was more alert and attentive after consumption. But if you get the higher one, it's even better. And there's also in the chocolate, there's theanine, T-H-E-A-N-I-N-E. And it's a really fascinating product that lowers blood pressure and produces what we call alpha waves in the brain. What are those? That's what allows you calm and peaceful states of being, what you would receive if you did meditation. So chocolate is good at helping to lower blood pressure, give you a state of calm similar to that of meditation. Now just imagine doing a little bit of meditation and having a piece of chocolate. You really bliss out. I talk a lot about the Mediterranean diet because I consider it a very healthy diet for the vast majority of people. Now, mind you, on a curve, and we have to look at things on a curve, because we cannot have one diet, we can't have one protocol for everyone, because that would assume that everyone could follow such a protocol. It takes out of the discussion what is reasonable to the discussion, the content of a person's life, the conditioning of that, their culture, their religious values. Think how many people eat certain foods at certain times in certain amounts in certain ways based upon sharing it as a part of their religion. Think of other cultures that will eat a certain amount of food in a certain way. Think of other people that want one item at a time on a plate. Others want everything they can eat on a plate. Think of people who've grown up eating salty and crunchy, sweet and soft. So to suggest, as many of the diets do, the paleo diet, which is really stupid, and other diets, that, oh, this is the answer, there is no answer. There's no one answer. If you want to do the end scale of the loop, if you want to go clear to the far extremes, well, that's where your extreme health is. But you'd have to be on a substantially raw food, 100% living food diet that gives you all of your protein, your fibers, your phytonutrients, your phytochemicals, your essential fatty acids, in as close to their purified organic state as possible. Okay? Maybe 1% of the people could do that. But what if people just increased some items in the diet? That would still help them? You bet it would. If you increased your fiber, you're going to increase better digestion, which is going to decrease constipation and itises in the intestine. So that helps. If you doubt me, ask someone who hasn't had normal bowel movements for a week or two, and how do you feel? I don't feel good. Would you feel better if you were regular? You bet. So always when giving advice, we must consider not to be extreme, but to show from zero to extreme and let a person decide where on that scale they wish to put themselves and then simply be there to support them if you're trying to simply make some changes. Now, there are other types. If you're terminally ill, some changes won't work. You're going to die. So if you make all changes, you still may die. There's no guarantee. But what if you had an extra day, an extra week? What if you were in excruciating pain? Come with me sometime to a hospital or hospice where a person's in excruciating pain and the family members are there. And the person goes in and out of consciousness. You see the eyes, but they're vacant. They're glassy because they're on enormous amounts of morphine, so much so that it's killing the pain, but it's also destroying cognition. So it's like a person's inside, they can see, but they can't respond. Now ask them, what if we could put a month of quality awareness without pain back into this person's life so they have a chance to say goodbye, they have a chance to reflect on their life, to share any final thoughts? Would you want that, or do you want to see them go out this way? So when people understand what is possible, yeah, then and only then, where are they willing to say, yeah, take it to the extreme. Before then, before an hour before then, a second before then, it's no. It's amazing, if you're in my shoes, what people will say no to until they have no more no's that they can say. Then they say yes. So when it comes to giving information, you always have to keep in mind who's listening, what are they likely to do, and realize in this life, we all are going to meet our karma. We're going to meet our reality. Let's take karma and not make it a religious or philosophical or spiritual determination. Let's relegate it to common sense, cause and effect. Everything you do that is done with the best effort, with the best ingredients, with the best material, there's a likelihood in your life you will benefit from it. But then, don't take care of yourself. Don't take care of your thoughts, your relationships. Allow yourself to be abused, eat crap. And then when you get sick or you get the flu more than often or you stay in bed longer and you're suffering, ask yourself, would you have done it differently if you could have looked ahead and said, I could have gotten through this year with no cold, no flu, no sickness? Would you do it differently? So that's also part of this conversation. In fact, this morning when I was in the park, a gentleman who is an artist, and he works as a painter in a building. And I remember him from 1990 when he and his wife came to a retreat in Texas at the old Healing Springs Ranch. And he's very, as a creative assertive, very fun, always upbeat. And he said to me this morning, he says, can I, you know, work out with you for a little bit? I said, sure. So we did a couple miles together. And he says, I'm teaching my daughter, who's just graduated from college, I'm teaching her just three things. I said, what are those? First, love yourself. Don't get your love from someone else. If other people appreciate who you are, good, but don't be doing for other people with the hope that somehow they'll appreciate you so then you can feel good about yourself. So I tell her, love yourself for all the right reasons. Secondly, do what is in your heart. Don't get tied into things just to survive, because one day you're going to forget about what is a quality of life and you're living only for survival. And I said, that makes sense. And he said, lastly, don't allow anyone to ever abuse you, because if you allow someone to abuse you, you don't love yourself. Don't allow people to speak ill of you or badly to you. Find another person. There's no shortage of good people who will speak the right way to you and treat you with the love you deserve. And that was it. I said, well, then you've done a lot of good for your daughter, if your daughter realized the importance and wisdom in your words. And with that, I finished my workout. Now think of the Mediterranean diet. Think of people who eating is just one small part of their day, but they take it to heart. You don't hear the screaming. They're not on cell phones. They're not seeing how fast they can chew and swallow. They're not eating in and at their desk because they got more work to do. They take their time. They talk about life and answer questions. The younger people ask the older people. the middle-aged people, ask the very old people, because there's a way that wisdom is respected in those cultures, the Spanish culture, the French culture, the Italian culture, the Portuguese culture, the Greek culture. In our society, it's just the opposite. The older you get, the more irrelevant you become, until you're just put into a bag with mothballs. No one cares, because you're not hip, you're not young, you're not vibrant, not sexy. Everything's drooping and sagging and bagging. So let's go find something that's more relevant to distract us. So when they look at life, they appreciate it every day. They don't take a single day for granted, nor each other for granted. You see, I've sat at the table with Italians where you have three generations at the same table, where 90-year-olds are looking at each other and they are dancing in that energy between each other, because there's a passion in this. I'm out there working in the field with them, and they say that every day when we get up, we look at each other and smile and say, aren't we blessed to have another day to be together? That's wonderful. And that is a lesson we could learn in our society, especially younger people. So when I look at the Mediterranean diet, I don't just see a diet. I don't just see a bunch of complex carbohydrates and some phytonutrient-rich foods, because you cannot separate out the Mediterranean diet from the Mediterranean way of thinking and living and being and sharing. It's not perfection, but it's a big step up from what we're doing. So here's something from the Institute of Biomedical Investigations in Spain, and published in the Journal of the American Medical Association's Internal Medicine. Quote, supplementing the plant-based Mediterranean diet with an antioxidant-rich extra virgin olive oil or mixed nuts was associated with improved cognitive function in this study. Quote, emerging evidence suggests associations between dietary habits and cognitive performance. Oxidative stress, the body's inability to appropriately detoxify itself, has long been considered to play a major role in cognitive decline. Previously, researchers found that following a Mediterranean diet, you can relate better with better cognitive function and lower risk of dementia. So this is a major study. This was a randomized study and with hundreds of people, and that's what they found. But you got to know how to read this. For example, they said in here, dietary habits. The habit is eating slow, relaxing when you eat, sharing the company of people you enjoy. That means good conversations, or in Spain in particular, wonderful music. And so that de-stresses you. So the eating and de-stressing are one and the same. We know that we create less stress hormones when we eat relaxed, when we're around people we enjoy being with. So for a good part of the day, their conversation and their eating is de-stressing them. Therefore, that other element, oxidative stress, quote, the body's inability to appropriately detoxify itself, is not enforced. They have a lot of fiber, so they're always detoxing. They have red wine and grapes. They're detoxing. They're rejuvenating with resveratrol and grape skin extract. One of the most powerful healing foods in the world are grapes, grape juice, grape concentrate, grapes. They're having it every day. It's a no-brainer. And they also know that they have natural remedies for everything, and they use them daily, just like the South Koreans do, and the Japanese historically have done, and the Chinese have done. New generations don't, and they're as sick as our younger generation, because they're stressed, they eat fast, and they don't have the essential fatty acids. They're getting the bad oils. What are the bad oils? High heated oils, trans fatty oils, processed clarified oils. If you see an oil that's clear and nice looking, don't drink it. You want oils that have the minerals in them and the antioxidants. Now, granted, the minerals may separate, may look like little specks. That's fine. They hadn't been clarified or purified or bleached. So you want your extra virgin oils, whether it's walnut oil, olive oil, avocado oil, coconut oil, macadamia nut oil, flaxseed oil, the rich virgin non-GMO organic oils. Now, what are the bad oils based upon how they're processed today? Canola oil, sunflower oil, safflower oil, sesame oil. But real sesame oil is rich in antioxidants and healing nutrients, just as sesame paste is tahini. So the less processing, the healthier the oil. The less stress, the healthier the person. And finally, this extract reduces high blood sugar and cholesterol and blood pressure. In fact, they tested it against metformin, a major drug that's used for this. Quote, onion, a powerful bulb that makes food taste so good, is also good for you. Hundreds of studies have documented that onions contain many compounds shown to be beneficial for numerous conditions. Recent research has found that onion extract has strong action against high blood sugar and total cholesterol levels. Medical doctors, led by a team of anti-diabetic physicians, compared doses of onion extract in the laboratory to metformin and found that 400 to 600 milligram dose of onion, by the way, that's actually a small amount, very small, it's like an eighth of a teaspoon, could boost the reduction of fasting blood sugar levels by as much as 50% in the laboratory. Okay, quote from the study, onion is cheap and available and has been used as a nutritional supplement. It has the potential for use in treating patients with diabetes. All right. So what's the takeaway message? Well, there are multiple human studies that have shown onion is protective of your heart and blood vessels. It can ward off a heart attack. And it's great for you. You've heard me say, an onion a day keeps a stroke away. It naturally thins your blood. It kills bacteria and viruses. It cleans the throat. It's great at detoxifying your intestine. It increases your bone density. It helps restore lost bone. It lowers your risk of hip fractures. That's just some of the things that onion does. And you can always eat onion with garlic, because garlic is your number one food for reducing inflammation. But onion's right behind it. The two together have unique molecular compounds that inhibit the activity of macrophages, the white blood cells important to immunity. And one of their defenses involves triggering large-scale inflammation. And though macrophage activity is normally a good thing, if you have too much of it, you get chronic inflammation, and then you get swelling and burning and pain. Well, the onion has a flavonoid known as quercetin, quercetin, C-I-T-I-N. And that flavonoid helps you lose weight, reduces accumulation of fatty cells, and then triggers the demise of existing fatty cells. So it helps bring down weight, it turns off inflammation, and helps heal vascular conditions and the epithelium in your tissue, and also helps you prevent bruising and spider veins. And red onions are a really good source of antho, anthocyanins, C-Y-A-N-I-N-S, anthocyanins. So great way of having these in salads. So help you lower your cholesterol, lower your blood sugar, lower your blood pressure, kill bacteria, kill viruses, help heal the intestines, good for prebiotics, all that. I'm Gary Knoll. That's the latest on health and nutrition. We got a lot more to go, including the mad science of making a nuclear airplane. Well, gee whiz, what happens if there's a problem? And also, what kind of shielding would they have that would prevent the engines from radiating the people? Back in a moment. Please stay with us. like to welcome all of you. Just a couple program announcements. We have a lot of programs still to come. I'm going to be out at the premiere on Long Island of my new film, Saving the Planet, in just 2 weeks, Sunday, the 26th of July at noon. And we'll have a question answer afterwards. And that's the last showing in the New York area. I want to thank all the good people in Woodstock who showed up, a great group of people. I want to thank the radio station who carries this program every day up in Woodstock. It was packed. And as well as the thousand of you who came as a fundraiser for our sister station, WBI, when I premiered it at the Big Lowe's Theater, 68th and Broadway. So this is the last showing. And so if you want to come and see this, it's at the Cinema Arts Center out in Huntington at noon, July 26. And let me give you a phone number to call out there. 631-423-7610. 631-423-7610. Also, good news. Our office officially opens tomorrow. And we still have a little bit of a touch-up to do. But we now have Celestina, who has a place to sit down and counsel people, and the counseling is free. I can only work with the time I have each day with terminally ill people, which means you have to have a letter from your doctor that you're terminally ill, that nothing more orthodox medicine could do, and then I go to work and try to help you. And of course, it's always free. I've never charged a penny to anyone in my life for my helping them. And so I have so many people who have so many other issues that need help with. And we're talking about probably we've helped about 35,000 people at this point. And so I have more people. I'm even hiring more people now. And I pay a very good living salary so that they can charge you zero. So if you need help, mind you, these are not medical doctors. These are nutritionists, people with backgrounds in nutrition, science, lifestyle, and behavior. You can get counseled for free. Call 212-874-4000, 212-874-4000. And right now, since Larry's taking care of his mom this week, it's Celestina who will help you. And you make an appointment. You got to make an appointment for her. We had temporarily moved up to 89th and Broadway, but tomorrow Neil will be back at our new office. And our new office, you'll find out when you call. And it's good. And I got a whole lot of new things I'm doing, too, that are exciting. I'll be sharing in the near future, including I don't want to mention today, I'll mention tomorrow, but I'm going to raise money. We're raising money this week for BA, and I came up with another way to have fun and raise money at the same time. So that'll be tomorrow. Now, I want to deal with this airplane and try to let you know what's coming. This is from Carl Grossman, Dr. Carl Grossman, who is one of America's leading authorities on nuclear power and has joined us when we've demonstrated it in front of the governor's office to close down the two nuclear power point up above New York City, about 30 miles north of New York City at Indian Point. Quote, the patent approval to America's biggest airplane manufacturer comes as solar power and green fuels are being shown to be feasible energy sources for flight. Last week, an airplane using only solar power, Solar Impulse 2, landed in Hawaii after flying across the Pacific. It's to go on flying around the world. Also last week, in an expansion of its use of biofuels for aviation, United Airlines announced the start of flights between Los Angeles and San Francisco of jets using fuel derived from farm waste. Further, United said it will invest $30 million in one of the major producers of jet biofuels. The Boeing scheme would have lasers, however, in an airplane engine bombard tritium, causing a nuclear explosion with its force providing thrust. Business Insider features a video on its website page with its article on Boeing patent that features Deepak Gupta, a founder of Patanjogi, YouTube channel, Gupta declares, quote, this is another cool invention for Boeing. Boeing has patented a nuclear power aircraft. The engines of these aircraft include a unique propulsion system. You think? Really? Whoa. Let me explain what you're really getting here. You're getting tiny nuclear bombs exploding inside of a plane. That's what you're getting. That's how it works. This is not a part of our nuclear renaissance. We shouldn't have any nuclear. Quote from Jim Ricchiero from Greenpeace. Imagine getting into an airplane that has minor nuclear explosions for propulsion. What about the implications of such an aircraft going down? We just saw an F-16 come down over South Carolina, its jet engine landing in someone's backyard. Meanwhile, we have breakthroughs in solar energy to the extent of that solar plane showing solar's potential. Solar energy is being used to accomplish things that nuclear couldn't. As we watch solar costs plummet and nuclear go through the roof, the future is solar, not nuclear, despite Boeing's attempt. So they want to have some, quote, heavy shielding to protect pilots and crew from radioactivity. You think? What about the passengers? Let me see. Who sits closest to the engine? The pilot in the front of the plane or the passenger looking out at the plane and saying, I'm sitting on a nuclear bomb. Yeah, you are. Just remember this. When that comes on, it's given a lot of positive publicity, not a plane you want to fly on. Also, what is addiction? Well, there's a lot of approaches to addiction. I've worked with addicts for a long time or people with addictive issues. I like to take a different approach, but one approach I've taken my entire career, I've never looked at addiction or addictive behavior as a disease of a chemical imbalance in the brain. And by working with a person to empower them to understand what's gone wrong in their life, why are they using whatever addictive substance to substitute for something that they did not get or got that was wrong, you can help. I've seen so many people stop addiction, never go back to it, never thought themselves an addict after that, just someone who made inappropriate choices at some point in their life. They and others paid a cost for it, learned their lesson, now they're stronger. Here's what a Dr. Gabor Mate has to say on this.
All the substances of abuse, whether they're opiates or cocaine or anything else, they're actually painkillers. Some of them specifically are painkillers. But physical pain and emotional pain, the suffering is experienced in the same part of the brain. So when people suffer emotional rejection, the same part of the brain will light up as if you stuck them with a knife. Then Eckhart Tolle says very nicely that addictions begin with pain and end with pain. So that all the addictions are attempts to soothe the pain. So when I work with addictions, the first question is always not why the addiction, but why the pain. And what you find is emotional loss or trauma. In the case of the severe addicts, as in the Downtown East Side here, they were every single one of them traumatized. There's no women walking the streets here who had not been sexually abused, not even by accident. But you know, whether it's a sex addiction or internet or relationship or shopping or work addiction, these are all attempts to get away from distress. Keith Richards, the Rolling Stone guitarist, said, who used to have a severe heroin habit, as you know, he said that all the contortions we go through just not to be ourselves for a few hours. Well, why would somebody not want to be themselves? Because they're in too much distress, in too much pain. So I don't care what they tell you about genetics or any of that choices or any of that nonsense. It's always about pain. Well, the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying, it's got a wonderful line in it. Whatever you do, don't try and escape from your pain, but be with it. Because the attempt to escape from pain is what creates more pain. And that's the reality with addiction. But the question is, how can people live with their pain? Well, only if they sense some compassion from somebody. So as another teacher says, only when compassion is present will people allow themselves to see the truth. So addicted people need a compassionate present which will permit them to experience their pain without having to run away from it. And all the attempts to run away, it's like another teacher says, the surest way to go to hell is to try to run away from hell. So you got to be with that pain. You just have to be with it, but you have to have some support. And we live in a society that one way or the other is always about instant relief, quick satisfaction, distraction. In other words, we live in a culture that is based on, both economically and psychologically, on not supporting people to be with themselves. So it's always the quick getaway. So it's very difficult to deal with addictions in a society. But yeah, it is a matter of, at some point, finding a way of being with your pain so that you can actually get to know what it's really all about.
And here's just a few words about living an authentic life versus the one that we live today. And then after that, we'll go to our guest.
Did you know the average person spends 4 years of his life looking down at his cell phone? Kinda ironic, ain't it? How these touch screens can make us lose touch. But it's no wonder in a world filled with iMacs, iPads, and iPhones, so many eyes, so many selfies, not enough us's and we's, see? Technology has made us more selfish and separate than ever. Cause while it claims to connect us, connection has gotten no better. And let me express first, Mr. Zuckerberg, not to be rude, but you should reclassify Facebook to what it is, an anti-social network. Cause while we may have big friend lists, so many of us are friendless all alone. Cause friendships are more broken than the screens on our very phones. We sit at home on our computers measuring self-worth by numbers of followers and likes. Ignoring those who actually love us, it seems we'd rather write an angry post than talk to someone who might actually hug us. Am I bugging? You tell me, cause I asked a friend the other day, let's meet up face to face. They said, all right, what time you wanna Skype? I responded with OMG, SRS, and then a bunch of SMHs and realized, what about me? Do I not have the patience to have conversation without abbreviation? This is the generation of media overstimulation. Chats have been reduced to snaps. The news is 140 characters. Videos are 6 seconds at high speed. And you wonder why ADD is on the rise faster than 4G LTE. But get a load of this. Studies show the attention span of the average adult today is 1 second lower than that of a goldfish. So if you're one of the few people or aquatic animals that have yet to click off or close this video, congratulations. Let me finish by saying you do have a choice, yes. But this one, my friends, we cannot autocorrect. We must do it ourselves. Take control or be controlled. Make a decision, me? No longer do I want to spoil a precious moment by recording it with a phone. I'm just going to keep them. I don't want to take a picture of all my meals anymore. I'm just going to eat them. I don't want the new app, the new software, or the new update. And if I want to post an old photo, who says I have to wait until Thursday? I'm so tired of performing in the pageantry of vanity and conforming to this accepted form of digital insanity. Call me crazy, but I imagine a world where we smile when we have low batteries. Cause that'll mean we'll be one bar closer to humanity.
Let's go out to Westchester County, New York, and say hello to Caroline Fredrickson. Nice to have you with us today, Caroline.
Hey, it's great to be with you. I'm really very grateful that you have me on your show. A wonderful show.
Thank you. Well, we like to deal with the serious issues that much of the media, including the alternative media, got wrong or is not objective about. And that's where we begin our journey today, because I believe anyone who looks at your work would be shocked at the condition of women in the United States. And I recall earlier this year a CNN report noting that only seven among 193 countries recognized by the UN have not ratified the International Bill of Rights for Women. Among those are Iran, Somalia, two Sudans, and Tonga, and the United States. In other words, the United States is among only a small handful of nations who do not believe people, regardless of gender, are born free and equal. And since the 1970s, U.S. has balked on serious international attempts to eliminate discrimination against women. I know there are only four countries, one being the U.S., that do not guarantee paid leave for new mothers. In almost every category on family policies, U.S. ranks at the bottom of developed countries, and now with Obama completing his 8-year presidency, aside from false promises, he has accomplished next to nothing on these issues. So I'd like you to take your time and put this social failure of our government and justice system into greater perspective. How bad is the U.S. on women's issues compared to other countries, and what other comparisons can be made that should concern our listeners?
Well, those are really great points. It is pretty shocking, I think, for people to realize how far back we are in the pack. You mentioned a couple of areas that are truly shocking, the lack of ratification of the UN Convention, the lack of paid family leave that puts us in such a small category of countries. And, you know, while I was doing research for my book, Under the Bus, How Working Women Are Getting Run Over, I certainly expected to find areas where we lag behind European countries, for example, or maybe Canada, other developed countries. But in these categories, we're actually behind everyone, almost everyone in the world. And so, you know, when you look at the sort of broad spectrum of issues, from protection against discrimination in the workplace, from access to paid family leave to a fully developed child care system, we are behind. And I can explain a little bit about that, but one of the things that I think is was certainly a revelation to me as I did my research for Under the Bus. Now, I was a practicing labor lawyer, and I did labor policy on Capitol Hill and in the Clinton White House. I'm pretty familiar with our set of laws, but one of the things I never really looked into, which made me a little disappointed myself, was really why it is that we have so many exemptions. And who are those people who are actually cut out of our protective laws, including minimum wage and overtime protection, let alone the right to join a union or to be protected against discrimination? And it turns out that, by and large, throughout the process of passing legislation, deals were made between those who wanted advances and those who were holding back, and they almost always left the same groups of people on the cutting room floor, and those were women of color. And so low-wage women of color are really the ones who bear the brunt of our worst exemptions in our labor policies, and they still are with us today, even though these laws were passed in the 1930s and through the 60s and even more recently.
Well, when we look at the majority of women that make up America's workforce, they comprise the majority of the working poor. 63% of women work at minimum wage, and the same percentage make up all part-time workers. Now, the U.S. continues to flirt with quantitative easing, just another acronym with less emotional impact for austerity measures like what France and Germany and the big banks hope to impose on less productive members of the European Union, as they are today with Greece. They're brutalizing Greece. They don't care about how many suicides, the most in Greece's recent history they've ever had. They don't care about how many young people, 58% of the Greece's younger people have no jobs. They don't care about people losing 30% of their pensions. They don't care about people working at minimum wages. And they don't care about the national treasures. $50 billion must be set aside of national treasures, islands, monuments for the rich banks and their investors to take if they default on what is inevitably an unpayable loan. And the same is true in the United States. In fact, since 2008-09 recession, women have been the most affected, and yet you don't hear a word in any of the political debates right now about how exactly is the average woman, working woman in America, affected by the economy. Who's responsible? What could we do to help their plight? How could we keep them in their homes? Could you put a moratorium on their homes from foreclosure? How could you help them so they don't have to work two jobs, some even three jobs? None of this is being discussed. Your thoughts?
Well, it's very true. And one of the things I like to point out is that, you know, we had some attention to income inequality in this country around the Occupy movement, which was really wonderful. But I think what we need to do is take, you know, our understanding of the fact that of the 99%, more than 50% are women. And so when we talk about economic justice, we have to include issues that have been sidelined and ghettoized and siloed as women's issues, as if somehow they're not as important. But actually, all these issues that we just talked about, paid family leave, child care, available, affordable, quality child care, protection against discrimination, access to paid sick leave, all of these things are actually about our economy. And the fact that we have not addressed them means that, that 1% continues to reap enormous, enormous gains on the backs of the rest of us, because we are all suffering from the fact that we have an economy where we're all working, and as you mentioned, women work in very high numbers. We're not going back to a Leave It to Beaver moment, and I would argue it never happened, because certainly for women of color, they were always working. But we're not going back to a time when women are in the home and men are in the workplace, and that's the division of labor, because you know what? Families need two incomes. And there are a lot of single parents, a lot of single mothers, who desperately need their income. So until we wrestle with that and understand that women are the economy, they are a huge part of the economy, and the worse that they do, the worse our economy does. And so we need to address these issues as core pillars of our economic program and not isolate them as if they were sort of inconsequential, you know, items for some women's club to talk about, you know, over tea.
I would like to see, Caroline, a million women march against inequality for the woman in this country to show the power women have, do general strikes state by state, and different businesses that exploit women, like Walmart. And by the way, are you aware that Walmart secretly hides $76 billion in overseas tax havens after pillaging American businesses? And that is a matter of fact. In fact, more than $76 billion, with a B, of Walmart's assets, according to a new report, are held in these overseas trusts and other crafty financial instruments, shielding the company from its U.S. tax burden. And a shocking 90% of Walmart's overseas assets are currently being held in either Luxembourg or the Netherlands, and the former of which doesn't even have a single Walmart store on its borders. And yet, ask the people that work at Walmart, are you being paid enough that you don't have to work two jobs? Are you given the right kind of health care, maternity care? And the answer is no. So Caroline, given the money spent on the military and useless intelligence agencies and subsidies to multinational corporations, there's no reason why we should have such a dismal domestic platform that invests child care, better health services, and better welfare for those unable to work. Instead, all the perks and benefits got into the large corporations such as Walmart, who are given freedom to exploit women and workers. And what would be your suggestions for ways to bring these problems to greater public attention?
Well, you absolutely put your finger on it. I mean, it is. We have allowed ourselves, the media certainly has captured a discussion that is not the one that we should be having. The media has focused on, and you mentioned Facebook earlier. It was mentioned in that great rap that you played. It's really terrific. I was going to comment on that and on the sort of alienation from work that happens through Uber and so forth, and using an app to kind of distance the worker from the employer. But you know, with the book Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg, who was the CFO, the chief financial officer of Facebook, you know, she wrote, and something I don't discount, it is, you know, certainly a factor. There's a cultural limitations that women, that are imposed on women, and but women internalize about, you know, not having enough confidence and not speaking up and so forth. But really, you know, I was tired of a conversation that was about whether women should lean in or whether they should opt out. You know, this is a sort of a New York Times, you know, they interviewed three women as if that represent the American workforce, who had opted out, who decided to stay home and raise their kids, because guess what? They were from upper middle class white families. Their husbands were lawyers or doctors or something like that. And they talked to three women. Well, the fact of the matter is, most women in America can neither lean in nor opt out. They have to work, and if they lean in, what happens to them is often what happened to Betty Dukes, who was a lead plaintiff in the lawsuit against Walmart, was a class action. And basically, she'd been working hard for Walmart, and she saw she's an African-American woman. She saw the white men around her getting raises and promoted. She knew she did more work. She knew she worked harder. So she thought she was going to go ask for a raise. Well, guess what happened to her in that circumstance? She was told that she was demoted. She had a pay cut, and then ultimately she was fired. So, you know, what I wanted to put on the table in my book, Under the Bus, was that, you know, there are women like Betty Dukes, there are women like Sonia Suarez, who is a domestic worker in Massachusetts, who testified in front of the Massachusetts State Legislature about the fact that she gets no protections in the workplace at all. Domestic workers are totally cut out of all of our workplace protections. So she was sexually harassed. She didn't get paid the minimum wage. She never got overtime when she worked 14-hour days. She couldn't take any time to go see a doctor when she was sick. These are the women I was writing about, and these are the vast majority of American women in the workplace. And so we have to sort of bring the conversation back to that. And again, I would say, you know, this is an issue that we need to stop putting in a little bracket as a women's issue, you know, child care and paid family leave. These are issues that are central to our discussion of our economy. And you'd mentioned some other countries. The ones I'd like to now point to are the ones that are doing better. So the Scandinavian countries, for example, they actually show, data shows, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development has data that shows that countries that have robust family leave policies and protections for women workers actually have higher productivity. They're doing better than we are, not just better morally and socially, but they're doing better economically because they're actually doing the right thing by their women workers and their men workers too, because men actually, let's not forget, have families and may actually want to have the opportunity to spend some time with their newborn baby just as much as their wife or partner wants to spend time with the newborn baby.
I would agree with that. Caroline, you've done a really good service to all people, but especially reminding women, you have power when you join and protest. I'm asking for a Million Women March to regain this sense of how essential women are and they shouldn't be paid slave labor. And the Under the Bus, How Working Women Are Being Run Over, the website is asclaw.org. Thank you for all that you're doing to remind us of this important issue.
Well, thank you so much. It's really a pleasure, and it's great that you get important real news out to your listeners because they're not getting it anywhere else.
I agree with that. Carolyn Fredrickson from Westchester County, New York. And finally,
from Washington, D.C.
You're in Washington. Okay.
That's okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you for being with us today.
Absolutely.
And I just want to close out today's program with a statement from Timothy Bancroft Winchy, and it's something we don't pay attention to. It's called Libya Chaos, the Result of Western Intrusion. It's short. Quote, "Why is it that whatever the West touches rots to the flesh within seconds? Why is it that the West always manages to choose the wrong side of terrorism, dictators, fascism, lobbies, forces which oppose and oppress people, holds them down and makes their lives miserable? Welcome to Libya, which the West destroyed in 2011 without any consequences. The events of 2010 are well known. The French installed themselves in Benghazi, which had long been separatist, trying to get away from the capital Tripoli and to the West, and the plans were drawn up with the other willing members of the Axis, including France, the United Kingdom, and the United States. And on cue in 2011, with the eastern-western border secured in Tunisia and Egypt, two other countries rapidly spinning out of control, Hillary Clinton, David Cameron, and Nicolas Sarkozy gave the nod to the involvement of their countries in the internal affairs of a sovereign nation, using terrorist forces on their own lists of proscribed groups. Not one of them has been hauled before a court of law, meaning that the legal systems of the United States of America, United Kingdom, and France are travesties of justice, their proceedings flawed, and their due process partial, subjective, and unconstitutional. and so the most prosperous country on the African continent, Libya. The country with the highest human development index, Libya, in all of Africa. The country whose leader, Gaddafi, was to receive a prize from the United Nations Organization for his humanitarian projects. The country with the best women's rights in the entire Arab world. The country which donated millions to Pan Africa. The country that had done the most to create the most healthy circumstances for its citizens, free housing, free education, free medical care, and other development projects. All that was blasted back into the dark ages by warplanes firing at government soldiers who were fighting terrorists. What sterling work by Hillary Clinton, David Cameron, and Nicolas Sarkozy, a sorry trio. And heaven forbid if Hillary Clinton gets anywhere near the presidency. And by the way, she will, because what group today just endorsed her? The American Teachers Union? I'll delve into that. And, of course, The Nation magazine, Mother Jones, all the typical corporate liberal groups, they'll all be behind it. Why is it no one calls her out on what she personally caused, the hundreds of thousands of dead Libyan citizens, the destruction of a sovereign nation, the rapists of its resources, and using known terrorist groups to do it, and yet not a word in the alternative or mainstream media. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.
Any day now, I will hear you say goodbye, my love, and you'll be on your way. Then my wild, beautiful bird, you will have flown. Oh, any day now, I'll be all alone. Oh, any day now.